Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, stick to my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
That's right, it's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to, the show that's going to tell you the truth about how corporate power is turning the American dream into the impossible dream for the working person, the show that rattles the left-wing limousine liberals who sit on their high horses while the working class fights their battles for them, and the show that loves to point out how the so-called professional media is selling us down the river by not reporting the news. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Avecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here.
Oh, well, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this show. But first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec at bellsouth.net.
Okay, and I want to thank all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. Also my friends at rantradio.com. Tuning in on Mondays and Thursdays, my friends at WNYmedia.net out of upstate New York, and everyone listening in from the blog or from their iPod. Okay, oh man, it's been a while since my last show, and I've been stressed out. I've been really stressed out. My wife has been ill. She's in and out of the hospital. She's in the hospital as we speak, and I just decided we're going to do a show here. And I've got Phyllis Euster here with me from CountPaperBallets.com. Hi again, Phyllis.
Hi, Joe. I'm sorry about Kathy.
Yeah, it's just
I hope
a real.
She feels better soon.
It's just really kind of stressful, and you know, it's a combination of a lot of things. I don't want to get too much into it, but she's taking a lot of medicines, and that might be affecting her. But you know, she's diabetic, and she got something called Bell's palsy, which basically paralyzed half of her face, and it's not a pleasant thing. And she was in pain all day today, so we took her down to the hospital, and we stayed with her for a while, but you know, we needed to get back here, so we're back here. And while we're here, we're gonna take care of some business since we haven't done a show in a little bit. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. There's been a lot.
Oh my god, what a world we're living in now, Joe. Huh?
You know, it's just this country is very cold-hearted, and it's. You haven't gone down to Grady Hospital very much, have you?
No.
Have you been down there for a while?
I've never been. I was blown away.
This is the first time you've been down there.
Talk about punishing the poor.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that.
8-hour waits. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah,
there's no reason for it.
See, that's where my wife is. She's at Grady Hospital. And the reason she's at Grady Hospital is because Grady Hospital was created specifically for helping poor people, people who can't afford to pay. And when I say poor, and I want to make this distinction because Bill Cosby talked about this. He said, you're not poor, you're broke. You know, poor indicates an absence of character, or it implies. And trust me, there's no absence of character as far as my wife is concerned. Phyllis would say there's no absence of character as far as I'm concerned, but I don't like to make comments about stuff like that. But because, you know, I know how screwed up I am. It's like I always say about, you know, other people and stuff like that. Well, you don't know about other people, but you know how screwed up you are. So, and I know how screwed up I am. But
no, you're not. You're
but
cool,
it's it's just for people who have no money or who don't have serious medical insurance and stuff like that, or even no Medicaid, because Kathy isn't on Medicaid. In fact, she's applied for disability so that she can get Medicaid because she doesn't qualify as it is right now, which is ridiculous because she is not healthy enough to do any kind of work. And I'm stressed out because I have to take care of her and take care of the house and a lot of other stuff. So, but You were talking to a very nice lady while you were down there.
I'll tell you what, it was interesting. There was a nice lady named Bonnie, and she was there because her aunt had fallen sick. But she said she was there from 1 o'clock today.
Yeah.
It was going on like 9 when we left, Joe.
Yeah,
it's like, why does it take them that long just to get someone some medicine?
Because there's so many people, and they don't have enough people, and they don't have enough staff there. And they can't afford to hire more staff. You think,
but she made a point. You know, it's our taxpayer money. She earned the right for that health care.
But it's not enough taxpayer money, and they don't get... And they keep getting budget cuts. I mean, Grady's budget keeps getting cut and
cut
and cut.
Well, Bush can get rid of all this stuff. He can take the money away from police departments. He can take it away from hospitals. He can take it away from schools. And then one day he's going to wake up and he's realizing that he's turned all of us into savages and criminals on the streets just trying to survive, just trying to feed our kids, just trying to – it's crazy. I mean,
well,
it's going to backlash.
He and his people simply have no understanding of it. They're all like salesmen. You ever hang around salespeople for a while?
Yeah.
They're extremely competitive, and they really see the world in terms of these black and white stuff. If you get money, it's because you've earned it and you deserve it. They don't want to look any further for it. You know, and they admire people who have money and have power because those are
criminals.
Goals.
That's how they get the money.
But they don't see it that way. They see it as being aggressive. And I saw it in a very small way working at Nextel as just selling cell phones. And my branch manager, my boss's boss, was basically one of these type A personalities. And, you know, just blaming everything on the salesperson when the sales weren't good. When I was telling, look, we're getting 3 customers in the store a day. How do you expect me to sell? I mean, we're not even talking about 3, you know, even 3 people coming in the store. And I don't mean 3 customers. A customer is someone who actually has a desire to buy something. 3 people walking in the store are not necessarily customers. And there were times on an 8-hour shift, that was all I would see. And I'm still supposed to sell X amount of phones a month, you know, a week. And it's like, look, I got to have grist to grind, is what I used to tell him. And, you know, he was like, you know, well, why should we keep you on? And I would say, well, you know, there's other reasons to keep me on. I mean, my sales aren't good, but that's not because of lack of effort or lack of skill. It's just because I don't have enough people. And there's other reasons to keep me on. And he was a baseball fan, so I used a baseball analogy. Vinny Castillo was playing third base for the Braves at this time. And he wasn't hitting very well, although he had normally been a very good hitter. But he's a great defensive third baseman. So sometimes you keep a guy in because he has other skills. I was a good organizer. I would have made a good store manager in time. But when they see – when Bush and Rove and all of his people – when they look at people like myself, people like my wife, and things like that, we're inconsequential to them. We don't matter. We don't count. We're not really human beings. When Bush talks about, you know, Americans won't put up with this, he's not talking about me, American. He's talking about him, American. Because that's a very, very narrow point of view that he's got. Very, very narrow spectrum of what he considers to be American.
But why do we let people like Bush and Rove get away with this without putting them in jail? I mean, why do we... Let me tell you, I called Bernadette Noe today, okay? I called her cell phone.
And Bernadette Noe is, let's just make
from
sure people...
From CoinGate, okay? So she and her husband collectively stole $10 million from the Bureau of, or more in rare coins. They convinced the Bureau of Workmen's Compensation in Ohio to invest this money. That's like saying, hey, I've got some land in Mississippi to sell you.
Right.
Well, somehow Ohio was stupid enough to do it. Then somehow magically they had all this money to donate to the Bush campaign, to the Schwarzenegger campaign, to the Governor Taft of Ohio campaign. All this money is illegal money. It's coin money.
Right.
So they're using Bureau of Workmen's Compensation, the people who file that they can't work, that they have to get paid a paycheck because they have an injury on the job.
Right.
They're using those people's money. Now, get this. I called her fucking cell phone today. Right? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you can curse. Okay. This is not fucking transmitted radio. Okay,
yeah,
you can.
I called her fucking cell phone. She goes, I'm not. She just sounded as cheerful as anybody. This woman's going down. She needs to be in jail. Her husband needs to be in jail. They need to be in jail for 100 years. They need to not see the light of day. Cheerful as can be. Hi, this is Bernadette Noe. You've reached my cell phone. Well, I'm not using this cell phone anymore, but if you want to get in touch with me, you can send an email to legalnoe@aol.com, and I'd love to hear from you. Sorry for the inconvenience. I'm like, yeah, inconvenience, bitch. You took $10 million from Ohioans.
And you know what that
inconvenience
$10 million...
my ass. And you know what you know where they are right now, Joe? They're in a house, a $2 million house in the Keys. I'm so grateful that the hurricane's going to hit their house.
Retribution.
I'm living for that.
A little bit of retribution.
But she and Tom left Ohio. Ohio's having a hard time chasing them in Florida because once you leave state lines,
it's hard to
prosecute.
Get home. Yeah.
And I'm sitting here going, these people have gotten away with murder.
And what would $10 million mean to a place like Grady? You know, I mean, I don't. I'm sure they have hospitals like that.
Oh.
Like Grady, there were Grady's all over the country. Atlanta's just one branch of it. But could you imagine what that would mean? The Grady Hospital, $10 million.
Well,
and then, you know, if you give it to that, though, people bitch. And that's what I wanted to talk about, because it's just.
But I think it's time for the citizens to start really not cooperating.
The
with
river hasn't caught fire yet, and I've talked about this mm-hmm. from time to time. And you know my reference about the Cuyahoga River, how nobody wanted to do anything about it until the fucking thing caught fire. You know, and really shit hasn't hit the fan yet. The river hasn't caught fire yet. People still are not aware of the effect this is having. I think the people were at Siemens, where I used to work, have understand it now, because some of them were real snotty about keeping their jobs, you know, about doing anything, you know, and getting, you know, getting uppity with me about my attitude, you know, before I got laid off. They said, well, we got our jobs. And pretty soon they're not going to have their jobs because they're closing up the plant and moving it to Mexico anyway.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that by fighting among themselves like that, They're not helping their cause. But let me give you another example of this, because I've mentioned this from time to time. My wife and I are on food stamps right now. In fact, it's really the only, if you can call it income, it's the only money we have coming in. We get $274 a month in food stamps. Now, this is an example of the cold-hearted world that we live in. And I'm going to use that phrase again here in a minute. But basically, what I'm required to do for this $274, and that counts for myself and my wife, because my wife is not medically fit to go to do this. I have to do her hours as well. They take that amount of money and they divide it by minimum wage, and they say, okay, you have to spend this amount of my hours, and this, my case, is 53 hours every month in what they call a work experience program. And that's a week and a day, a week and 2 days. That's seven business days that I have to spend 8 hours a day at this place. It's not work experience. There's no work there. It's 15 or 20 people who sit in a big room and do nothing all day. There's some minor little filing stuff that goes. In fact, I went downstairs to the archives one day to do some work, and I was happy to do some actual work. But the whole place was so disorganized. There were files all over the place. And I went to the lady and said, look, there's a month's worth of work for me to do here. I would love to get in here and dig in here and really organize these files and get everything straightened out, because this is people's lives. You know, this is where if they need somebody's file and somebody's record, if they need to find it, this is where it needs to be. And this work, this filing work, is being done by people who are either A, unskilled, or B, not interested in doing a good job. Why should they care? They're being forced to do this. And the supervisors do not have the time to keep track of them, because they're busy with their other tasks. If they had time to do it themselves, they would do it themselves. What they really should have been doing for something like that is hiring regular people. And, you know, and I was afraid to speak out, because I thought what they would do is they'd make it even harder. They'd make us do road work or some bullshit like that, you know, which is even worse. Look, this is time I could be spending looking for work. This is time I could be spending taking care of my wife, who was ill. And so this is what I did. I finally got to the one day, and I had enough. And I'm going to read you this letter that I sent. And
good.
I posted this on the board, and I put it on Daily Coast, and I got a tremendous, tremendous reaction to it. Let me read this. And I wrote, to whom it may concern, because I wrote this and I sent it to my caseworker. I sent it to Congresswoman McKinney, who is my congresswoman. Cynthia McKinney's great, but you know what? She really don't care much for white people. I'll talk about that in another show, perhaps. But I also send it to my state representative, Stucky Benfield. Okay?
Yes, Stephanie Stuckey Benfield. She's
very good, and I didn't get a response from her, but I sent it via email.
Aside from her friendship to Kathy Cox, I like her.
Okay, so this is what I wrote, and I wrote it not – even though I sent it to my caseworker, I made it clear to her that I wasn't sending it or addressing it to her personally, mm-hmm. but basically to her supervisors in terms of the whole system. I wrote, when I first applied for food stamps and learned of the work experience program, I was under the impression that this program would benefit me in my search for work so that I would not have to rely on food stamps. But after a few days, it became apparent to me that there was little work or experience to be had. Work experience for me means that I had to sit in a large room with 15 to 20 people for 8 hours a day, 7 days every month, doing absolutely nothing. This does nothing to benefit me and, in fact, takes away from my ability to find gainful employment. For the record, I'm required to spend 53 hours a month at the Department of Family and Children's Services, DFCS, in order to get $274 in food stamps for myself and my wife. Under normal circumstances, my wife and I would share this load. However, my wife is unable for medical reasons beyond her control to participate, and therefore I am forced to work her hours as well as mine. Now, on occasion, I've had the chance to do some filing in a downstairs vault. However, I discovered that the entire system was completely disorganized. Many files were misplaced, and the supervisors had no time to refile and reorganize them. This work should be done by regular full-time employees and should definitely be not left to people who are either unskilled or have little incentive to do the job correctly. There are many people on welfare and food stamps, and if their file is lost or misplaced, they could lose their benefits through no fault of their own. I don't want to give the impression that the DFCS doesn't offer any help at all. The job resources room at least allows access to a computer and help from the Department of Labor and lists jobs that are available at the DFCS. I actually did apply for one. I'll get into that in a second. However, there's only so much time you can spend doing so. Computer use, for example, is limited to 1 hour a day. The great bulk of the time is spent being idle. And if I needed to use a computer, I could use my computer at home or I could go to the library and use a computer there. So after careful consideration, I've decided that I will no longer suffer myself to be humiliated and degraded in this fashion. As it currently stands, the work experience program is little more than a part-time prison sentence. The people who are forced to sit in this room are treated like children.
Joe.
And it is my considered opinion that the entire program is meant to humiliate people into finding work. I'm fully aware that by writing this letter, I will in all likelihood lose my food stamps. But frankly, I think I would rather starve than to submit myself to this any further. Even what little dignity I have left is not worth losing over $274 a month in groceries. Now, I want to make it clear that I'm not looking for something for nothing, especially since my taxes, when I was working, paid for the food stamp program to begin with. If the DFCS can find a better way to move people from food stamps to the workplace, I'll be very happy to participate. I cannot speak for others, but for myself, I will say that my time would be better spent in the pursuit of work and not in the enforced idleness of the work experience program. I should add that the program as it stands is a burden on the DFCS as well, putting them in the position of babysitting people and taking them away from other work that undoubtedly needs to be done. I also do not understand why DeKalb County is the only county that forces its food stamp recipients to participate in this charade, and I am sending copies of this letter to my state representative and to Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney so that they can be aware of what is happening in their districts. I think the entire program as it currently stands is a disgrace, and the people who came up with it ought to be ashamed of themselves. I do not expect DeKalb County to change its stance on this issue. In this cold-hearted world, punishing the poor is simply accepted behavior, and I don't see this attitude changing anytime soon. I hope that I find work soon, and I hope that I never again have to rely on food stamps. I wish this not only for myself, but for everyone else. It's humiliating enough having to apply for food stamps to begin with. It's worse being treated as if I were somehow breaking the law. Sincerely, Joe Vecchio.
Gotcha.
That's the letter I sent to
That's so impressive. That is such a good letter. I hope you get some attention. Have you heard from Stephanie?
No, I haven't heard from anybody official yet. I will say that I got a letter from my caseworker saying that she understood that there was a medical issues here. So if we get a note from my wife's doctor saying that I have to take care of her, then I will be exempt from doing this. And that would be nice, but it's still not my point. My point is that the whole program needs to be dispatched to begin with. And some of the comments I got on Daily, because we had a couple of trolls, a couple of right-wing trolls who were busy poking questions like, are you doing this for work? Are you tried this work? Have you tried that work? So, you know, first of all, you know, that's none of your business. You know, how hard or how – and they have no idea what my situation is. You know, I mean, you could sit there and say, well, if I were doing this, I would just – well, I'm not you. You know, if I could have taken like a pizza delivery job, I would have. But my car can't handle that.
Your car's not good enough.
Yeah, my car will not handle that. My car's barely good enough to go to the supermarket and back. And the supermarket is not that far from here. You know, the supermarket's a 5-minute drive, and my car barely makes it there and back. Okay, but you know, my whole attitude, my whole point is that people shouldn't be humiliated into that. You know, there's no reason for this, and. You know what really gets me, too, is that there were some people who were actually proud of the hours that they spent there. And that's what really got to me. They were like, well, I'm doing what I have to do. You know, you do what you got to do. And I'm like, why do you put up with that? You know, why do you take that attitude? And that attitude only makes them take advantage of you even more.
Right, but anybody in today's society is playing the victim to Bush and his bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got to stop playing the victim. I mean, I read that Howard Dean is doing some paperwork to take care of Roe. But sure enough, when the London bombs hit, what two spineless jellyfish Democrats stand at attention with their, you know, aye, aye, you know, sir, to Bush It was Pelosi and Harry Reid.
Yep.
They're both like, we totally support you, Bush. Everything you're doing. I'm like, no, that's not the time to say.
No, definitely not the time, especially since it's partly the reason is it's his attitude and his policies that are causing.
But these spineless jellyfish are not doing anything for us.
Fucking Democrats. Goddamn fucking Democratic leadership. You know, and Governor Dean, and I know you haven't been as happy with him as you would like, but I think I understand where he's going.
I think Dean is doing...
He's biding his time.
A methodical job, and he's going to hit them with all he has.
And I think sooner...
That's what I've heard from the rumbling from my little Dean network.
Yeah, because they're... I think he's just biding his time, building up his little state by state. Because you know what? A lot of the state people are very pissed off at the Democrat, national Democrats. And we talk about the limo libs and, you know, a couple of big fundraisers.
Oh, yeah. He's fighting the Democrats. I mean,
yeah.
The governor from Louisiana didn't even show up at one of the Dean
events. Yeah, what's her name? Landro. And she's like...
But she's a Republican and a Democrat.
And it's fucking weird because she got in because her husband was killed. And her husband was killed by Republicans. You know, I mean, we don't know that for sure, but he died. He was one of two people who died in mysterious plane crashes just a few weeks before a big election.
The,
him
the
and Wellstone.
The list of people killed by the Republican Party is so long, Joe, that we'd devote a whole show to it, and we still.
Well, you can list everybody in Iraq that was killed because they were killed by the Republicans.
I'll say this: they killed Ray Lemmy, they killed Ethan Gibbs in the election reform world, they killed indirectly. They killed Andy Stevenson.
Be careful with these. Accusations now,
yeah.
Because you know they could list you as a terrorist and they could lock your ass away.
I'm already on so many. Lists.
I'm probably on somebody's list somewhere.
At this point,
too.
It's the point of diminishing returns. I might as well be a complete asshole because I've been to every peace march, you know, that I could find. The bottom line is they don't. In the olden days, they used to track people like me. The problem is they don't have the manpower. Because everybody is like me now. Everybody's going to peace marches. Everybody's becoming a social dissident.
Some of these marches prior to the Iraq War were bigger than any of the Vietnam War marches. And this is before the war even started. They were some of the big marches were bigger than Martin Luther King's I Had a Dream march.
I still think that 7 out of 10 people think Bush needs to go and that the press is not giving us a voice. And what I loved about London was that it made ABC News really show that the blogosphere was where the real action was at. Like all those people with their cell phones, they were coming back. They weren't giving it to ABC News. They were giving it to the Guardian and to the Raw Story. Raw Story, I watched Raw Story for my news about London. I didn't even turn on my TV. I didn't even think to turn on my TV set. Because I knew it was going to be bullshit.
I don't even bother with it anymore. And there was such Atrios was pointing out all the other bullshit. And you know, on the Cup of Joe blog, while I'd sometimes talk a little bit about current events like that, you know, I mostly try to tune things more towards, you know, poor people, working people, stuff like that. So I basically I wrote something along the lines of, you know, the other bloggers are dealing with it. But I did notice something very interesting because. There have been two major terrorist attacks when the United States media has focused on two things in particular. White women, where are the white women at, and shark attacks. I didn't hear word one about shark attacks until just before 2001. Just before, you know, 9/11, they were talking about shark attacks. And I didn't hear anything about any kind of shark attack in any summer between then and now. All of a sudden, this summer, they start talking about shark attacks again. And there's the missing white women story because remember who the woman was prior to 9/11? Chandra Levy.
Yeah.
That was nonstop 24/7, and they had some stories about shark attack. Those were the big news events.
It's almost like they're trying to key us up so that when the terrorism comes, which I still think that they're probably perpetrating the terrorism too, that they got you so keyed up on these other stories that you're just, you know, you're ready to say, yeah, let's go kill some Iraqis.
And there are other stories too going on. Well, listen, let's take a little break, and we'll handle that in the next segment. We'll talk about it then. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. The only thing that George W. Bush has succeeded at in life is failure. And now the United States and the whole world has paid the price. When you are born into an elitist, wealthy family, you expect, like kings and queens, total loyalty regardless of your ability. That is the essence of Bushivism. Protect the dynasty. Say whatever you have to say, do whatever you have to do, but protect the Dauphin Prince at all costs. So it doesn't matter to the Bushaviks that our soldiers, Iraqis, and foreigners are dying in an endless quagmire, a terrorist heaven that Bush created in a colossal blunder. They can't admit their mistake because Bush's credibility is solely built upon his stubborn delusions, which the press spins as resolve. Bush ran for office in 2000, deriding that Clinton allegedly ran the government by polls, while Bush asserted that he would only rule by morally sound principles, whatever the fickle public might think. Only it isn't true. This is perhaps the most focus group poll-driven administration in history. In fact, the Washington Post reported the origins of Bush's current mantra of, "We are committed to winning in Iraq." Yes, the very same White House that outwardly exudes contempt for polls has in fact recently hired a prominent academic pollster onto the National Security Council staff and has concluded that the key to public support for the war is not the number of casualties in Iraq, nor whether the war was right or wrong, but whether people feel like we're going to win. So it's not about fighting terrorism or about the unnecessary loss of life and limb. It's, as usual, about Bush, the spoiled rich kid who believes the world revolves around him. And so the man who said he would never make decisions by polls is continuing a war that makes no sense by using findings from polling about how to sell a failure. That's hypocrisy on a tragic scale, a hypocrisy that has brought death, torture, and catastrophic injuries into far too many families to count. There are some hypocrisies that can just never be forgiven. This is one of them. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. Whew, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And we're here with Phyllis Euster from CountPaperBallots.com. That is .com and not .org, right?
.com.
It's .com. Okay. God, that was some pretty nasty stuff from BuzzFlash. Those guys rock.
Well, listen, that was fantastic.
I don't know who the guy is that does a voice for that, but he does very good. And I'm glad they do that because it's like three or four minutes or so they don't have to
I'm
talk.
I'm just surprised they don't every week have Bush as the hypocrite.
No, they, trust me, they could, but he has his own thing. But BuzzFlash.com is a really, really great website. It's one I recommend you visit every day. Some places, and I used to have it on my old site, but they have like a BuzzFlash news thing that you can put on your website, but I don't do that because, you know, when you have people have too much of that stuff, it tends to slow the site down. I like to keep my site simple. There's so many other sites that do that, and everybody who goes to my site knows about all the other sites anyway. So, and one of the things I heard about, now, was it last week or the week before, the Young Republicans or the College Republicans or something like that had a big convention, and these are truly, to me, the scum of the earth, because these are people who are physically fit, of age, totally support Mr. Bush and his war, but won't go and fight. And in fact, we're saying, well, the Army is meeting its recruiting goals, so we don't need to go. Or we're fighting the fight here. In other words, they're fighting us. They're fighting the liberals. We're Al-Qaeda, according to them. And they started up this thing. One of the guys there, a guy by the name of Renteria, no relation to the Albert Renteria, no relation, as far as I know, to the great shortstop for the Boston Red Sox. But he started a thing called Operation Interdependence. And look at this. They got trademarks and they freaking copyrights all over the place here. And basically what it is, it's a place to, for civilians to send stuff to the soldiers fighting in Iraq. Okay? So I wrote a parody thing about it. In fact, you see this Young Patriot at War. You see that, like my little picture there? Picture of the College Republican Convention. Wreck and ruin. Destruction unto the world. Let no one survive. It's from a Thor comic book. I saw that and I thought, that looks like the College Republicans convention. But I wrote this. This is not an actual quote, but to me it summarizes his attitude and the attitude of the young Republicans towards the soldiers. Okay? Dear soldier, I cannot tell you how proud we are that you are over there in Iraq fighting for us. Please accept this chapstick and pack of chewing gum as a symbol of my appreciation for your sacrifice. I hope you like it. It cost me all of $2. And I got it at Walmart, too, the most patriotic company in all America. Maybe when you return, you'll work for me when I manage a Walmart shop of my own. Don't expect to get more than minimum wage, though. As you know, I strongly support our president and his bold stance against international terrorism. I would join you out there myself, but for right now, I feel I am doing my part by combating the liberals in this country, who, as you know, are busy supporting al-Qaeda. Did you know that they are spreading propaganda about how the military is falling short in its recruitment goals? And that Durbin guy called you all Nazis, too. Don't worry, we will take care of you terrorists. We will take care. You take care of the terrorists there, and we'll take care of the terrorists here. Sincerely, Albert Renteria.
Okay. First of all, this guy is so full of shit.
Yeah. Well, it's not. It's not an actual quote.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not. It's not. He didn't really say that, but that's a parody. That's what's called parody or irony. Okay.
Who wrote that?
I wrote that. But
that's fantastic.
But it is summarizes his attitude. I mean, that to me summarizes how we kind of feel.
The Republican mentality.
Now, I got a letter from email. Okay. From Rebecca Forrest with one R. Who was an ambassador, the Austin, Texas ambassador. They're the fucking ambassadors. What is this shit? And again, a little fucking copyrights and trademark shit.
And they're not even doing it right. They're putting R symbols when they should be having what, it was a C SM. Symbol. Or service mark.
A circle with a C with a circle, right? For copyright?
Copyright, but registered trademark is different than like a service mark or a trademark.
They don't fucking know what
they're
doing.
Yeah, they're idiots.
But she is an ambassador from Austin, Texas of these assholes.
Oh, we should call her.
And she wrote, Dear Mr. Vecchio, during our routine internet searches, we discovered a recent posting by you entitled Dear Soldier. While we respect your right to make commentary as you wish, the manner of this particular posting contains erroneous information about our organization. It also suggests that an OI representative made the comments and approved the posting. This, of course, is not the case. We kindly ask that you remove the erroneous information and detail only facts you have uncovered while visiting our website.
Oh, my God.
I am sure you can appreciate our concern and understand our desire for accuracy in postings. OI, and again, there's the fucking trademark thing, OI provides a means for civilians to show their support for our deployed forces in a manner that does not impact military resources. Feel free to contact me if you have any questions or would like additional information to clear up any confusion you may have about our organization. Thank you in advance for your understanding and cooperation in this matter.
These people take themselves way too
seriously.
First of all, you want to help the soldiers, you know, get your ass over there.
Well, this is my response.
Yeah.
He says, Dear Ms. Forrest, no, I will not remove the post. It is an obvious parody protected by the First Amendment. You remember that, don't you? Oh, sorry, I forgot. You're a Republican. Which sums up what I believe to be Mr. Renteria's condescending attitude towards our soldiers. If Mr. Renteria wants to send anything to Iraq, he should send himself. As far as I'm concerned, anyone who is of age and physically fit who supports this president and his policies who hasn't already enlisted is a sniveling little coward who warrants the contempt of free people everywhere. That includes you, Ms. Forrest. Sincerely, Joe
Vecchio. That is brilliant. Good answer, man. Good answer. But, you know, it is. The Walmart-loving, look what I just gave you. Aren't I kind? I just gave you $2 worth. First of all, these soldiers have to get calling cards from their family just to make phone calls home. Are you telling me that the U.S. government can't even flip the bill for a phone call?
You know what?
Parents?
Let me tell you something.
Makes me sick.
I was in the military, and I'll tell you fucking why. It's because all the money, and the United States spends more. If you took how much the United States spends in defense and compare with how much the rest of the world spends, it's almost equal. The United States spends something like, if you took all the money that everybody in the world spends on defense, and that's 100%, okay? I think the United States has something like 45% of that is the United States. 55% is everybody else in the world, okay? So we're only barely below what everybody else is spending. But where does that money go? It doesn't go to the soldiers because they have to borrow and trade for armor.
Black jackets.
Yeah, and it's fucking ridiculous.
You know how much a phone call costs over the internet?
Oh, I'm sure.
One-tenth of one penny, Joe.
Okay, now, And here's the thing. Most of these soldiers, they're working class guys just like myself. Some of them supported Bush because, you know, there were some conservatives in there. But I'll tell you, a lot of the rank and file soldiers are kind of like me. And I was a veteran. And I'll tell you where all this money goes to. It goes to toys for generals and toys for admirals. The big high-tech things. And it goes to fucking defense places like Halliburton.
How many F-16 planes and choppers and cluster bombs did we need to stop Al-Qaeda from hitting
and it's
London?
Not, yeah, it's not even smartly spent. Let me give an example, because I used to work in...
Not one of those damn things has helped stop Al-Qaeda. In fact, we're not doing anything with the spy network.
You don't defeat this type of thing. You don't hit SWAT a fly with a bazooka.
Yeah.
You know, there are ways of going about this.
They have no idea how to fight
war. This is all Cold War stuff. And all these people, Rumsfeld and Cheney,
all these people are old
Cold War people. And this is not a Cold War. You know, someone mentioned that they came into office as if the 8 years of Bill Clinton had never happened. You know, they just picked up where they left off. And it was just not the same world. It's just, okay, let me give you an example of how the military operates, or at least how it operated when I was in there. I was in calibration, what they call PMEL, Precision Measurement Electronics, in the Air Force. And my job was to calibrate electronic equipment. Okay, and I worked at Misawa Air Force Base, Japan, which has F-16 jets on it. And while I didn't work on the jets directly, I worked on equipment that went on the jets or was going to be used to help the jets. Like one of the things that I had to calibrate, and in fact I had to write the calibration procedure for it because it was brand new, is something we called it a beer can because that was the shape of it. It was basically a missile test system, and it had a very complicated way of testing to make sure all the missile firing systems was working. And I actually had to create the calibration procedure from scratch. And I did that all, and that was fine. And it was something that I really enjoyed doing. When I first started doing it, I could do maybe one of those in 2 days. It took me 2 days to do one because I was working out everything. But once I got the system set up and got everything built that I needed to have it tested, I could do 9 or 10 a day. Okay. Now, sometimes they were bad, and there was a couple of times when you had to make an adjustment or so. And one time I had to make an internal adjustment to it. It's not that much of a big deal. But I lost the screw. Screw fell. Shit happens. You know, little tiny screws. It happens. So I went to get a replacement screw. And you know what? There weren't any replacements. I went to order a screw. I was told that any type of internal stuff, anything above, you know, that was not like a knob or an outside switch or something like that, you had to order an entire new unit. Because nothing internal was covered for that. Now, they were talking about circuit boards, but I'm talking about a fucking screw. You know? And to me, that was a symbol of the waste of it. The absolute waste of it. And I forget, there was another one. It was a Hickok. Hickok 1503M multimeter. For those of you who don't know what a multimeter is, it doesn't matter. It's a measuring tool, okay? Worst piece of shit you ever saw in your life. Every time I saw one on the shelf, I automatically picked it up and started filling out what they call NERTS paperwork. Not repairable to the station. It was a reject, basically, because they were never accurate. The needle always stuck. It was an analog, which meant it had like a needle, not as opposed to a digital readout. And it was expensive, and you had to plug it in, and it was lousy, just lousy, and its accuracy sucked. So I just rejected. And some of them started to get mad at me. Some of my supervisors said, you can't be rejecting these all the time. I said, I'm not putting my stamp on it. Because that's, you know, a calibrator, when they put their stamp on it, they're responsible for that equipment. You know, if it's got my stamp with my number on it, I'm responsible for that. So after a while, I saw these and I knew what pieces of shit they were. And my attitude was, look, if we put these things out in the field constantly, then people will think we want more of them and they'll buy more of it. There's a company called Fluke that makes very good digital multimeters that have three times the calibration cycle, which means how often they have to come back for a calibration. The Hickok's had to come in once every, I think, 2 months. The Flukes didn't come. Had to come back every 6 months. They were 10 times more accurate, and much better, much easier, battery powered instead of plug in, all that stuff. And they're a little bit more expensive, but it's worth it over time because it pays for itself in the lack of maintenance. These things always had to be repaired, and we had to nurse a few of them anyway. So, but at any rate, that's how the military is.
Right.
That's how the military.
But it's
is.
A false economy because every dollar we spend on this poor technology that would never make it, by the way, in the commercial sector. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff that the Army uses, the only reason they buy it is because somebody made friends with somebody that owns the company.
There's a lot of cronyism that goes on in that.
Too much. And what happens is now that Bush has taken all of our private sector money and put it into the Pentagon, we have a false economy, but for every dollar that gets spent, it's a dollar that no longer gets circulated back through our economy. It's a dead dollar.
Well, you know
something? It goes away.
I think... Sometimes, and again, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know what goes on inside their heads. But I think one of the reasons why they did this war is to bankrupt the federal government because they want to destroy the power of federal government because the federal government is the only thing that's stopping these people from really, literally robbing us blind and enslaving us.
Yeah, but who is the Pentagon going to rip off if there's no U.S. government?
Doesn't matter.
Who are they going to rip off?
Look, you know something? They'll let the Pentagon fall away because you know what? They don't give a shit about the Pentagon either. What do the hypocrites say? Who do they care about? Who do the Bush people care about? The Buzzflash people. Who do they care about? They care about themselves. That's all they give a shit about.
Right.
So long as they have all the money, it doesn't matter.
Bernadette Noe ripping off $10 million, living in her $2 million mansion in the Keys, and having a cheery voicemail. I mean, that is the epitome of hypocrisy.
Yeah, damn straight. Listen, let's take another break here. And we got some other stuff to talk about, some more, I don't want to say personal, but some more down-to-earth activist type of stuff. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And I don't often do this, but go ahead and drop a dollar in the bucket if you can. I have two ways you can donate, a set amount of your choice, or you can donate $5 a month towards the show. I'm still looking for enough people to fill out my Century Club. I'm looking for 100 people to donate $5 per month to help me out. That would provide me with $500 a month minus a few dollars for PayPal as some sort of income, and that will help keep me and my wife going until I get a job. And once I do get a job, it'll help me to buy better equipment. From some of the donations I have, I bought a DVD-ROM writer, which some people might think is a luxury, but considering the amount of stuff that I download, music and graphics and stuff I use for the show, having a DVD-ROM writer would be very much useful because I didn't realize this until just recently, but you can store data on a DVD-ROM disc, and you can store like six times the amount of data on a DVD-ROM than you can store on a regular CD-ROM, and I have over 200 CD-ROMs full of stuff, so... Andy Stephenson.
Stevenson.
My apologies.
Yeah, this is a sad story. My heart is heavy this week, Joe. He died on Thursday, I think, in 9:30 Pacific time, and it's really sad because it really could have been a good story. We raised the community around election fraud raised $50,000 for Andy.
$50,000.
All right, and they did it mostly in $60 increments. There was some woman from San Francisco. I forgot her name. And a woman named Mary Beth Kuznick who did a great job, and just a bunch of people rallied around Andy. It was a real, that was a real hero story because Andy's a hero. He's a real American patriot. Two weeks before his surgery, he was in Columbus, Ohio, giving a seminar on how to audit your state because he's really anti-Diebold. He was one.
He was at the seminar that you went to, right?
Up in Columbus, Ohio. I actually got videotapes of him, and he looked great. I was so shocked when I got the news that he passed away. It's just really sad. He died of pancreatic cancer. But what he really died of was the complications. And he went to Johns Hopkins. But you know what, Joe? This is really a tragedy. He raised all that money. It was in a PayPal account, okay? And then some people from the election community, and I'll admit it was probably people like Bev Harris and others, who posted on the Free Republic that they weren't sure whether Andy was sick or not.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that caused some real freepers to call PayPal and shut down his account. And that delayed his ability to get the check. So anyway, the bottom line is they got the check, emergency, like right the morning of his surgery. It was in the mailroom of Johns Hopkins. And those fuckers were so bureaucratic and so backwards that they canceled his surgery without even checking in the mailroom was the check there. So that 2 weeks, I think, was a fatal 2 weeks.
It just goes to show that the failure of the American healthcare system, that what they care about is the scratch first, that they care about the money more than they care about the patient.
Oh, they John Hopkins was brutal. They're like, you've got to have the cash up front. We're not even talking to you.
Maybe you should have gone to Grady.
And even though that he was introduced by apparently some owner of a baseball team, I think. Somebody said the Baltimore Orioles. somebody like that. Anyway.
Oh, Angelos? He's a big union guy. He's a big left-wing.
Angelos was what got Andy in the door at Johns Hopkins, because you can't just, anybody can't just go there.
Right.
It's still a rich man's club.
Right.
But at any rate...
It just goes to show that paying a lot for good medical care doesn't necessarily mean you're going
to get
better
medical care.
But Andy
was somebody who worked his ass off. Let me just tell you some history here, Joe. There were three people who started the election reform movement, and I got to say, they've been very successful.
Mm-hmm.
Roxanne Jacket of Georgia mm-hmm. was Bev Harris's webmaster. She got me going on everything, even though she is a vitriolic person every now and then, and, you know, is mad at me that I took the cause up and went running with it. I don't know why she's mad at me. I have no idea. But that's what happens. There's a lot of personality disagreements and everything like that. But people like Roxanne, Andy, and Bev have suffered. All three of them have suffered enormously. They've been attacked. They've had all sorts of, you know, things happen to them that are just not right. But the bottom line is Andy helped Bev, and then Bev was able to raise, like, somewhere in the neighborhood of hundreds of thousands of dollars over the web. And I guess they had a falling out, and Andy's big thing was that Bev did not pay him. So he devoted many, many months of his life to the election cause. And even when she didn't pay him, he stayed working in the election reform industry. He pushed for hand-counted paper ballots before it was even cool. I mean, he was a real hero. And so the fact that he's passed away is really, really sad. But in a weird sort of way, I think it gives a lot of us in the election reform community cause to really work harder and to bring the lawsuits so that his death is not in vain.
Now, I remember Ben Birch of the White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org, which is where my archives are. He talked about, you know, he wrote a couple of posts on DU about Andy as well. And because the amount for the surgery was fairly exact, $50,000 even, there were some people who were questioning whether he was really
sick.
That's
at Johns Hopkins. I know for a fact, because I know from some friends who know Andy, that it was $50,000. I mean, mm-hmm. that was not.
But what I'm saying is, I'm not denying. But what I'm saying is, because the amount was so specific,
yeah,
people were unsure, and there were some who got pretty nasty about it on Democratic Underground. I do not generally go into the Democratic Underground message forums. The big reason is I do not have time. There are thousands upon thousands of people who read Democratic Underground. And if you get into an argument with somebody back and forth, you could literally spend 3 or 4 days fighting out. One of the guys who is a regular and has been a regular on Democratic Underground for a long, long time is William Rivers Pitt. Very good writer. A little, what's the word? He writes, he uses a lot of words. Okay, I forget the term for that.
Verbose.
He's very verbose. See, I'm a guy who's a decent writer, but you know I write very short.
Will and Andy were best friends. I met them the first time in the PDA conference in Washington, D.C. During Bush's bullshit election.
But apparently, Mr. Pitt, now that Andy has passed away, has taken it upon himself to say he is going to seek revenge on the people who were...
Big waste of time.
That, and it's like, it's so sad because it's so pointless. Would Andy have wanted this?
No.
I don't think so.
No, Andy
I mean, I didn't know
have.
Andy personally. I never met the man.
He was very humble. He was mad at Bev. He named his tumor after Bev. But at the same time, he kept going forward and moving forward and working on the cause that matters. Will Pitt needs to focus his time on the cause that matters. And that is honest elections, you know?
It's just sad to see progressives fight among each other like this. And it's just a symptom of the way we are. We really need an overwhelming, unifying cause that's not just...
We don't have a leader. I've been saying
we don't have a leader. We have an enemy we can point to, and we have a series of enemies that we can point to, but that doesn't make us all agree upon an alternative.
And I wish like a Jesse Jackson Jr. or somebody would really come up and unify all of the fractured groups, even within the election reform community. We have people who really get that it's about hand-counted paper ballots,
mm-hmm.
and then we have people like Joan Crowitz of Vote Trust USA saying, oh, you know, Optiscans are just fine. And when I confronted her on email, I said, Joan, dude, it's the same software. It's the same rigged software in a Diebold Optiscan versus a Diebold touchscreen.
Right.
They're both bad. They're both computerized. We've got to take them all, put them in a truck, and drive them over a cliff.
Well,
that's what we have to do with Diebold.
You've sold
drive
me on
the
this.
Fucking machines off a cliff.
You and Defenders of Democracy really sold me on this. I hadn't really given it a whole lot of thought.
Now Howard Dean's saying.
Now Howard Dean's finally saying.
We've won.
What are our things? We want ballots counted by hand. We want the paper ballot to be the official ballot. right? Not for recounts, but that to be the official ballot. We want them counted by hand at every poll when the polls close. And we also want a chain of custody for the ballots. Everything should be done out in the open and in public.
Yeah.
You know, Kathy Cox, in that infamous meeting that we had, was actually making the argument for us. She was saying, well, in Washington State, it took them three times to get it, and in the hand count, they finally got it right. The argument was, well, let's do it by hand right the first time, and you won't have to recount it.
Kathy Cox, who raised $2 million just now in the last sector, you know, Kathy's going to have her own little problems later when she realizes the kind of information that we put out about the mistakes that they made.
People know, you know, and
the bottom line is, even Howard Dean is saying these machines are illegal. They have to produce a paper record. Guess right. what? Maryland, who has Diebold, not Maryland. Is it Maryland? No, there's another state. New Jersey just came up with paper.
No, I think it is Maryland.
Well, little by little, all the states are saying paper trail. But
oh,
the paper
yeah,
trail
yeah.
doesn't matter if it doesn't get counted.
That's right. You got to have.
That's
you
where Dean is totally miss. Someone is not educating him.
You gotta get it right the first time. You know, there was a Billy Joel song on the Strange album. Get it right the first time. That's the main thing, you know, and that's what we should be striving for. Get it. And you know, we're in such a rush in this country. What's the fucking hurry? The election's in November. The people don't take office till January.
Yeah.
In fact, they're not required to list the electors until what, December or so? Late December? So there's no rush.
You can count the ballots quickly. You can just make poll workers like jury duty and have an ass load of people there.
Either that or I mean, take all the money that you spent on these fucking machines and hire poll workers. I mean, and you know, we talked about it with one of the lawyers. I won't mention his name, but he said, you know, the only problem I see with all of this is that a lot of the people who work these polls are fucking idiots. And
yeah,
that is the plain truth. And a lot of it, you know, they're people in their 60s and 70s who grew up in a different world
yeah.
than we did.
Get a bunch of yuppie, you know, progressive Democrats counting the votes. I guarantee you they'll be honestly counted.
Don't get Republicans.
But I got to tell you something that happened real quick.
But you know, if we do it, by the way, if we do it very publicly, then even the Republicans.
With video cameras.
Yeah, then even Republicans couldn't fuck it up.
Throw it on blogs, you know, county by county. Have a county by county blog.
Okay, we got about a minute and a half, so let's go.
Okay.
Just want to let you know.
I sent an email to John Burrell. John Burrell of Lucas County, where CoinGate is.
Right.
Does not want to release the emails to me. You know why, Joe? He says the emails are being deleted every 2 weeks.
See, that's illegal, isn't it?
It's illegal. So he's crazy.
Have you no shame? At long last, sir, have you no sense of decency?
And he's a Democrat. I have to fight my own Democrats. It's really sad.
It's a sad state of affairs.
I'm going to have to take him to court.
It is a sad state of affairs in this country. And poor Andy, you know, passed away, and we just keep losing him. You know, why aren't the
He's a martyr. Giving us a lot of energy.
You know,
his passing has been a real polarizing force for the community.
I wrote William Pitt. And I said, you know, there's more constructive means for your energy. And in fact, what I suggest, I didn't write this in a letter, but excuse me, I wrote him a cough. What I should just say was, why don't you take up Andy's cause?
Yeah.
Why don't you take Andy's energy? You know, instead of wasting all that energy for going after people.
Go after Diebold. That's what he was going after.
Yeah, so take that energy and go after Diebold.
Go after Bernadette Noe, who's living in a $2 million house.
That's right. That's a...
On Bureau of Workmen's Compensation money. That money was paid for out of criminal activity.
And, you know, they just had a thing about underfunded pensions. In fact, I do the DeKalb Democrats newsletter, and they had a very brief article about underfunded Georgia pensions. So, anyway, that's really about it. It's about all we have time for. Phyllis, I want to thank you for being on the show, and we'll have you on next week. Wink, wink.
There'll be lots of fireworks next
week. Lots of fireworks. All right. That's it for this episode of the Cup Joe Radio Show.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I want a cup of Joe. I'll crave a plate of Dave. Open a jar of John. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug. The creamer of Steve, how many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of Dick, that'll do everything. Open a can of Dan, make a meal of Sam, but don't give me no mo, cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe radio show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
A plate of Dave, creamer of Steve, a mug of Doug, a cup of...